Welcome to the Shanty Sound Podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Byrne, and to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of Shanty Sound, I've started my very own podcast exploring one of my favourite topics, the healing power of music and sound. I'm a lifelong musician, and I've also been working extensively with sound therapy and sound healing for many years now. And I'm guessing that perhaps like me, you're here because you're also interested in all things to do with healing music and sound. Over the last 10 years, both through travelling and the internet, I've met some pretty awesome people, and I'm excited to get to know them even better through these interviews. I'm really interested in people and what draws them to begin sharing music and sound in a healing or therapeutic way, and in learning more about the healing and uplifting effects of immersing in sound and music. So if you do enjoy this podcast, I would love you to hit the subscribe button on whichever app you're listening on, and do feel free to leave a review or a comment. And you can also check out the show notes from this and every episode at shantysound.com.au/podcast. My guest on today's episode is David Breach, known as Sriprana. He's from Nungkeri Centre for Physical, Mental and Spiritual Wellbeing, which is in Maiponga, South Australia. David has been following the path of yoga for over 40 years. He practices and teaches integral yoga. David is also a Bowen therapist and combines yoga therapy with Bowen to help clients in a wide range of physical and mental health areas. David's yogic learning, practice and teaching is influenced by the classical teachings from many sources, including Paramahansa Yogananda, Swami Satyananda, Swami Gitananda, and those masters who emphasize spiritual development and yogic lifestyle. He also studied yoga with Dr. Savitri Devi of New Zealand. David is a devotee of the Bhakti Master, known throughout the world as Amma, the Hugging Saint. David was chosen by Amma to teach her integrated Amrita meditation in South Australia. He's been a regular visitor to her ashram in Kerala and has travelled extensively throughout many areas of India. David has a strong interest in yoga history and philosophy. He plays harmonium, guitar and sings bhajans, devotional chants. He began this part of his bhakti yoga journey using only guitar, but during his first India experience, he bought a harmonium and while staying in Rishikesh, taught himself to play the harmonium. David has been holding regular kirtans in Adelaide over a number of years. He now holds monthly kirtans at his yoga studio in Maiponga. Participants are asked to make a spiritual donation which goes to support four charities, which are Hutt Street Centre for the Homeless, Catherine House for Homeless Women, Smith Family, and Fred Hollows Foundation. David offers chanting and harmonium lessons to people who are interested in bringing the joy of kirtan into their lives. He is passionate about sharing his knowledge of yoga and enjoys helping others discover how the rich, textured layers of yoga practice can be integrated into daily life. So I'm very pleased to welcome today David Breach. Hello, lovely man.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Oh, it's so cool to have you. Thanks for being here. Yeah, I am really excited to pick your brains about all things to do with chanting and om and harmoniums in this chat. And I know you've got so much wisdom and knowledge to share. But firstly, I'd love to know a little bit about you. So can you tell me and our listeners, where did you grow up? Where are you now? And anything in between that you feel drawn to share?
Yes, well, I was born in Birmingham in England back in 1945, so that gives away how old I am. I'm 76 now. We lived in there until I was about nine, and then we came to Australia. My stepfather had a job at the in South Australia at the was the Woomera of Rocket Range. The older people listening might know what was that, but that was when they were testing, I guess, the early missiles and things. So that was going on quite extensively in Australia. And so we came out here, and so I did most of my later schooling here, which is a blessing. I really embraced being in Australia. It was the country that adopted me, and it's been such a wonderful time here. I moved away from home when I was about 18 and went and worked up in the bush in the country with a stock and station agent. And from there, I sort of moved around different jobs, even spent some time in the Navy, worked in the building industry, and that goes on and on and on. But I at one stage of my life, I was working as a roof tiler, and I hurt my back pretty badly and I couldn't walk. And I did that a couple of times, went back to work, and I think the universe was saying to me, time to give up this and do something else. So I took up yoga, and that was my first experience of yoga, and I never looked back. It helped my back. It took me about 10 years to say my back was really good. But along the journey, I first came into Kirtan. We're going to a yoga retreat where people were, mostly women, walking around and chanting Om Namah Shivaya, and I was really taken by the sound and the chanting of Om, and it's the vibrational sound. And from then I started to look into that that journey. But in my personal journey, of course, I've lived in several places. We've spent many years living in Maiponga on 3 acres, but the last 3 years we've been in the town, living here, where I've moved my yoga studio from where I was into the town. So I teach now 3 nights a week in Maiponga. And as you said, we also, in your introduction, hold Kirtan here once a month, and also teach harmonium. So that's just a nutshell of my journey. It's been a very interesting journey. You look back at my time of life and look back on it, very colourful, I think. But that's where I am now. So my wife, Shirley, and I live here. She's not into yoga, but she supports me in what I do. That's my part of my journey. And you know, yoga is a part of my daily practice and daily life. Yeah.
Awesome. And you mentioned that first time of being around people chanting Om Namah Shivaya way back. When was that? Tell me what
that was. Talking yeah, about. I was with a group. Actually, I was involved in a yoga group in Adelaide. Started in the 1950s by a lady who was friends of Sachinanda and other, and she actually brought Swamis to Adelaide. This was in the 50s and the 60s. It's a long time ago, doesn't it? Her name was Iris Cluttram, and she had ran the Iris Cluttram School of Yoga in the 1950s, and they developed from there into the South Australian Yoga Teachers Institute, and then the institute that became the Yoga Institute of South Australia. But they used to hold regular retreats. And that's when I first went to a yoga retreat. I think it was that's when I first came across them chanting Om Namah Shivaya. I was aware of the Hare Krishnas at that time, who used to dance through the streets of Adelaide in their orange robes. You would have been very young then, Michelle, I think. it was a bit of a curiosity, I guess. But I was playing guitar. I've been playing guitar since I was very young, sort of just nothing special, you know, never aspired to be a performer or anything like that, but I liked the music myself. And so after I became interested in the music of the bhajans, I started to look up music, and I found it was very hard to find actual music for the chants. So I used to listen to the sound and work out what the chord structure was, and so I could play the different chants. So I got up a collection of chants, and so that's where I first started with the guitar. But of course, after that, when I in 2004, when I first went to India with a good friend of mine who went there regularly, I went to Pune and bought a harmonium with the help of her late guru's brother, and up to Rishikesh, and I sat there and thought, well, I can play guitar, I can work out how to play this, and which I did. So, and that's that how I started with there. So.
Amazing. So you just kind of translated the chords that you knew into being able to use those on the harmonium?
Yeah, well, if you look at the harmonium, of course, harmonium is, I don't know, we're skipping around, I guess, a little bit, but the harmonium is, it's not an instrument, an Indian instrument as such, because it originally came from Germany. When the early missionaries went out to India, they couldn't take their big church organs with them, so they needed something to carry with them. So they had made this box, as the people who know the harmonium, the simple box, which you pump with one hand and play with the other. And, of course, that went to India. But the Indians were very interested in the instrument, mainly at a lower level. The Indian professional or higher musicians scorned on it as a instrument not to be taken into their sort of music, though it has, of course, crept in, and some fine classical harmonium players we found in India and all over. But the Indians adopted the instrument, so I don't know if they even, I doubt it's ever made in Germany anymore. Hmm. But of course, the harmonium now is made in India, and you can go on eBay and see all the thousands of harmoniums, some of doubtful quality, I'm not sure what to. What I worked out is that it would take me ages to work out all the ragas, which are the traditional playings around the chants. So I thought, well, I'll take the approach of, I guess, the jazz musician to using the chords and improvise around the chords. And you can do that quite easily with the harmonium, using it as an accompaniment instrument rather than playing a melody. Though you can work, of course, a melody around that too. So that's the way I taught myself. So just starting, and most of the chants are there. They're like folk music. I guess they're the folk music of India. If you look at the history of Kirtan, which came out of the in the 1500s in India, and I'll get his name right. So the Bengali saint was Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he encouraged the people to take the sounds that they heard in the chanting of the priests in the temples, and to bring them out in the street and chant them for uplifting, so that people come out and so chanting their Hare Krishna and Rama Rama and all the chants that we know from our kirtans and from our bhajans. And so people started to do that, and after a while, of course, somebody comes along with the drum and said, oh, we can do a bit of drumming here and cymbals and clapping the hands and even dancing. And so that's where the kirtan evolved. And from there, so it is a folk music, a spiritual folk music. It's not classical music as such, as of the Indian style with the ragas. And look, I'm sure a lot of people will say, oh, you know, that's not the traditional way to play the harmonium, but the harmonium was developed as a folk instrument in India. I don't think the early missionaries ever envisaged what would happen to their instrument, but it did. Of course, the uh, it always amuses me because the when you go to India, they accept Jesus as a holy man, and even my own guru speaks about the teachings of Jesus, and of course they say that, you know, people come along at different times in our history, in our lives, to lead us on the right path. And so I think it's lovely that they see Jesus as a saint and a guru. That's a little bit about how Akirtan came to be in India. And of course, it's very much related to the bhakti, what is bhakti yoga, which is the devotional yoga. In the West, we tend to think, oh, yoga, and we think about going off to the local gym and sweating ourselves out and doing lots of strong postures and things like that, thinking that we're doing great things in yoga, and not knocking that, because that's, you know, people are doing that, but the yoga is so much deeper and richer than that. And my guru, Mata Amrit Ananda Maya, is a bhakti master, and I've been following her for over 20 years now. And they do a lot of chanting there. And even it's interesting throughout India, the different types of chants. So the chanting in the north and the chanting in the south are quite different. They're still similar, but you can pick up the little differences, and even in the, some of the phrasings. And there, so it's quite a rich area of to do your research in and look for different chants. I was we had a kirtan recently, and I had a gentleman come along. He got brought along by a friend, and he said, I'm amazed. He said, I don't know any of the chants you chant. He said, I've never heard of them. And I said, I'm a bit like a gypsy. I go around and I'll pick that one and pick this one. And so you're finding different chants in different ways. So take them from the Satchinandas, from my guru's chants, and listening to different people chant. I think the beautiful thing about kirtan is that you don't have to say, oh, this is the only tune you can chant to. So you find what works for you. And so, sometimes I adapt chants to make sure that the people who are attending the kirtan can sing those chants in the key. So I don't use a lot of different keys there. I keep it to a few, and so in a range that I can sing in, of course, but also I know that other people can sing in also. I always remember going to a kirtan once where there was a wonderful German lady who had a very operatic voice. Unfortunately, she sang her kirtans in an operatic voice and nobody else could match them. So I thought, that's a little bit pointless to me. So I just kept that in my mind and thought, I don't want to do that. So I tried to be inclusive with my chanting.
Yeah, it's great to make it accessible for people.
That's true.
I think it's amazing the way that people resonate with chanting, and people will come to a kirtan without having any, you know, knowledge about yoga and about the chants and what they mean, and they can still have such a rich and deep experience. And, you know, it moves some people to tears, doesn't it?
It does. I think that's true. The thing about the chanting is that you don't have to be a yogi, as in hatha yoga. You can come to the chanting, and that might be all the practices you do in your chanting. You know, that's part of yoga. You come and chant, because, you know, through science now, we know different research that's going on. We know that when we chant or we sing, we do it from a different part of our brain to where we speak. So our chanting brain and our speech, or the part of the speech, is different. And I think that this has been proved by the people with aging deficits where they've perhaps lost the power of speech or are losing the power of speech, such in Parkinson's and people like that, can actually still sing. And you can teach these people to sing. So I think it's really marvellous because it shows us that there is part of our brain still we can get that resonation and the vibration. And this is the big thing. You don't have to, people say, oh, what's this chant all about? And I might give a brief outline about what the different deities that we might be chanting to. But I don't say, doesn't matter whether you really understand it, just feel the vibration of the sound. So it's really important that people just relax and release and come out of themselves to sing. And then I've had people come up to me after and say, I'm having tears after chanting. So, and I say, well, that often happens, you know, that we do. We have these experiences where we release those emotions and those pent-up energies in a good way.
Yeah. I wanted to pick your brains about the mantra Om in particular, just that one syllable mantra Om. I remember years ago actually going to a workshop with you and it was really, really, really amazing, and we spent time just using the mantra Om, and we were doing this practice where it was like three, three and three. And anyway, I just remember that it was really, really powerful just spending time just practicing the mantra. But I wanted to ask you, what exactly does it mean and some ways we can use the mantra Om?
That the practice that you talked about, of course, is the Pranava Pranayama, which was taught by Swami Gitananda. I never knew Swami Gitananda personally, of course, but I was lucky to meet a gentleman called Sri Balaratnam. I think he's passed now, lived in Melbourne, and he came to Adelaide and he taught us how to use Om in a vibrational way as a pranayama, as a yoga breathing practice. And so you'll probably remember where you breathe in for the count of three, and you chanted the mantra Om out for the count of nine. So it's a one, two, if you like, a one to three. But each of the sounds, so the ah sound, the ah sound, the oo, and the oom. So those three sounds. And we're told, of course, by the yoga masters that the sound of the mantra Om is the sound of the, this is the sound of creation, the sound of the universe. And so we, yoga, in the yoga teachings, they talk about the cosmic dance, that we're all in this cosmic dance, this vibration going on. And that vibration is the sound of the mantra Om. So we have this, the vibrations going, and so when the mantra Om stops in the universe, of course the world ends, and then the vibration starts again and we're recreated. So it gets a little bit tricky, I think, in our minds, and it's quite mind-blowing. But I think one of the good ways to experience the mantra Om, of course, the Pranava Pranayama, which I've taught at different times and still practice myself, using that vibrational sound. And I find that practice really good for people who sing, because it just helps us develop that extension in our breathing capacity. So to be able to breathe in for a count of three, filling the lower, middle and upper areas of the lungs, and then moving from the lower area with the sound ah, middle om, and then the upper ooh, and then the upper mm, you can extend that sound. And after you practice for a while, you find it quite easy. It's difficult to start, but after a long time for practice, you find it's really beneficial. And so done as a daily practice, it's really beneficial. So, I think one of the things I experienced was when I first came to yoga, was sitting in sessions where we chanted the mantra Om together for long periods of time, where you just let it flow. So you didn't have to be in time with anybody else. It just flowed and became that complete flowing. And you became really aware of just how powerful there's just the one sound, the sound Om is. So there's the ultimate mantra, if you like. So there are different mantras, of course. And yours find, like I have a mantra for my guru, and all the mantras that the masters give, they all start with the sound Om, and then there'll be whatever the words are that they have, they're finishing with Namaha at the end. So now I'll say to people who say, oh, I haven't met a guru, how am I going to get a mantra? And I say, well, you don't have to wait to see the guru. What you can practice is the beautiful chant Om Shivaya Namaha. So chanting Om Shivaya Namaha 108 times every day. The sound of Om Shivaya Namaha are very powerful, and they work through those elements of the chakras and give us that sense of that oneness with the sound of not only Om, but with the connection with Shiva as the ultimate yogi. So Shiva is seen as the ultimate yogi. And so I think I find that is a good practice for people who may never meet a guru in this journey, to get a mantra from the guru, but can use that chant. So.
Yeah, and there's lots of different versions online that you can find to chant along with too, isn't there?
This is right, yes. And I think, there's the, of course, we do Om Namah Shivaya, so turning it around, of course, but as a mantra, it's all Om Shivaya Namaha. But of course, we can do chants, and it comes down to the vibrational sound of the words. But the mantra Om is very powerful. In those states of the waking state, the sleeping state, and the deep sleep state is all reflected in the mantra Om.
Hmm. How is sound used within the Ama community? I'd love to hear a bit more about your guru and the practices that are associated with her and that the meditation that you do. Maybe just touch on that.
Yes, well, they tell the story. They say that you don't find the guru finds you. And so my experience was that I have a good friend in Adelaide who's a yoga teacher, and she was going to Melbourne with her daughter, and she said, I'm going to Melbourne to see this woman in Melbourne. She's a Bhakti master. You should come and join me. And so I hummed and hawed a bit, and I thought, there we go, I get the time off of work to do that. So I never went. But then where I live, I have to drive down through the hills. Those who live locally will know of Selex Hill. And I drive down Selex Hill while my friend was in Melbourne, and this lady in white appeared before me and said, why aren't you coming to see me? And blew my mind away. And, you think, I wonder what pills he was on that day. But that was a real experience. She came to me. And so I made contact with, I started to find out more about the Ama, and there was a group, a satsang group in Adelaide devoted to Mata Amrita Nandamaya, and I sort of became in contact with them. And when she came to Melbourne again a couple of years later, in 2000, I decided I'd go and see her. So And as it turned out, I was going to drive over there, and they asked me, they said, oh, we've got a couple of guys who are devotees of Sri Chimoy, and they would like to go over. Would you take them with you? So we travelled over there, and the days ahead we had tapes, let's go back a bit. So they're playing Bhajan tapes all the way over there. And so we went and spent, and it was a beautiful setting. It was in the country. It was on a farm, and there was a big hall there, and people could sleep in tents or sleep in boarding dormitories. But anyway, we went, Amar, and I was just blown away when I met her. And there was a whole weekend there, and on the Sunday night, all these people came up from Melbourne, and it went all night. So we stay there and you have darshan. Amar's darshan is when you spend time with the guru, but with Amar darshan, you actually get a hug, so it's just pretty special, and you can really feel the energy. So I got a mantra from Amar, and we drove back on the Monday morning as high as kites back to Adelaide. So that was my first experience with her. But after that, I saw her again, and I went to India to her ashram. So I've been a few times to the ashram there and stayed there, and that again is a different experience again. Of course, with the restrictions at the moment, but not able to go to satsang, things like that. But I have a meditation which I learned from Amar, which is called the Integral Amrita Meditation. And it's a meditation where you're using visualization to focus the mind. So you're actually doing work, if you like, or taking a journey through your spiritual self on a spiritual level with the meditation. And I was lucky enough they were looking for people to teach it in Australia, and I was asked if I would teach it in Adelaide. So when a lady called Rema Devi came to Adelaide, she came through Australia teaching various people, and I was one of them in Adelaide. So I've been teaching that ever since. But that's the main part of my spiritual practice. I do other practices of hatha yoga practices and pranayamas, but I do the finish with the meditation, so which takes about 35 minutes. So it's a wonderful meditation. I found it really. I think in my heart, I was always looking for a meditation to do, even before I met Amar, and looking for a master or somebody to teach me meditation. I've tried different meditations over the years, but the I Am meditation, as they call it, is just wonderful.
Mm. Is that a daily practice that you do?
It's a daily practice, yeah. Mm. So I do that practice. As I say, I do. I'll do that. I always try to do my practice first thing in the morning. I'll do yoga postures, and I've got several different routines over the years. A yoga teacher, I've developed my own practices and things that I teach, routines I teach my students in my classes. But I use those, and then I'll do the Amar meditation after that. So I find that it takes a lot of practice. As Westerners, we're not used to becoming focused on doing practices like this. Often my students who come to my yoga classes, and I give them yoga routines to do. I say, oh, I'll send you these, I'll email you these routines, we'll do it in class and you can do it at home. But some of them say that they're just happy to come to class once a week and do the practices. So not everybody is going to be in the same level as I have. I think you have to appreciate that. I think it's the same as chanting, the same as kirtan. you know, not everybody is going to, you know, a lot of people think probably we're pretty weird people who want to chant, but the people I know, like yourself and James, you know, that we really love it. We know that this is a path for us. So it's not as I say to people, my journey's always been yoga. It's been for my health and my well-being, my mental well-being, emotional well-being, as well as my physical well-being. I've been through the yoga path, but I'm not saying that is the only way. You know, there might be other things you could do, other practices. But for me, this has been, this has been the greatest gift I've ever had.
Oh, that's so wonderful to hear. It really is. Yeah. But I agree, it is different for everyone, isn't it? I went through phases of doing 40-day practices or 40-day sadhanas, and then sometimes I would just fall off that, and then my sadhana would become walking my dog religiously at the same time every day, you know. So it can change with your over your lifetime as well, can't it? What works
very much so, very much so. Yes, I mean, I've seen, you know, I can only go on my own experience. I always say to my students and people who ask me that, I only teach what I've been taught. You know, I never set myself up as you know, somebody greatly involved. I mean, my journey still goes on. There's always a saying people say to me, oh, you know, wonderful. I say, I'm just the dust at my guru's feet, which is saying that, you know, you don't see yourself as an elevated form whatsoever. Is the best way to be, you know, because but with our practices, of course, they do change over the years, as I found as different people came into my life, spiritual people, yoga masters and things like that, my practices changed. But once I met Amma and I realised this is my guru, then I became set in that this is a practice I do. I can do other practices, but I've got a set practice that I do every day, which is the mainstay of my yoga practice.
Mm.
Because I spend time, you know, have different timers and get the harmonium out, and we go through chants, and I have to say to people when they come to our chants, I say, listen to these ones now because you won't hear them for another 8 months, because we've got eight sets of chants that go through for 2 hours of chants. So we've got, I forget how many, 40 or 50 chants or something that we do. So so they never repeat. So we always are getting through and doing them. So I said, you won't hear this one again for 8 months. So.
Oh, it's such a joy. I was going to ask if you think that the harmonium is easy for people to learn. And I wanted to bring in a little chat about the Shruti as well with that.
Yeah. Well, harmonium easy to learn. Do you know, I have taught quite a lot of people in Adelaide how to play the harmonium. The way I learned, or the way I taught myself.
Mm.
And of course, there's only a few of them have ever persisted with it. And I'd say, you know, it's like any yoga practice. If you don't do it regularly, then it'll fall by the wayside. And Michelle, you know, as a musician, that, you know, if we don't practice, whether we're playing guitar or drums or whatever we're doing, if we don't practice, then it falls away, doesn't it? So we need to do that. We need to practice. And I use what, when I teach people, I had a lady recently just came to me, and sometimes you get a student come along and some of them are actually brilliant, even though they had no knowledge beforehand. So there's certain people who are better at it than others, I must say. And I don't know if the people listening to this are aware, there's a teacher called Dr. Suzuki. He teaches violin and instruments. And the Suzuki method of teaching is that you teach people actual songs they can sing or play, so they're actually gaining something straight away rather than getting them to play scales and things like that. So I use the same method. I have a set of chants too, and I say to them, come for 2 hours, and you'll go away with at least three chants to do. And I said, and the information to be able to go on and do other chants. So I give them audio files of all the chants so they can hear what it sounds like, and I give them the structures and how to work it out. And so, but some of them I never hear from again, and some I do. But I had a lady the other day, quite surprised me. We went through all the chants. I went through every chant with her. So she's in 2 hours, and she was getting really good. So it's not impossible to learn the harmonium. You've got to have the desire, and you've got to have, I guess, the devotion to chanting. You know, if it's like any musical instruments, like guitar and other musical instruments, even just playing drums, you know, to learn to get the right rhythm, it all takes practice. Mm. So I say to people, practice every day. It's like yoga. If you don't practice, you don't get the benefits. So, I found the way I teach, it's a simple way. It's not a classical way. So, having spoken to people, and I've actually spoken to Krishna Das when he was in Adelaide. I spent time with Krishna Das when my friend Linda Burr brought him into Adelaide, and with him, and I watched him play. And he uses very similar methods. Dave Stringer, another well-known Kirtan player from America, works his way in the same way of using. He's a bit more a jazz musician, so he uses a slightly different way. But for ordinary people, they're folk songs. These the chants of spiritual folk songs from India. Mm. And so we can learn them. They're quite repetitious in the fact, and that course of the repetition, of course, of actually going is the thing that that sort of makes the chanting so wonderful, is that it's quite simple. But sometimes we, you know, in a complicated world, especially the world we live in, it's nice to have things that just put us into one place. And, you know, singing Hare Krishna, Hare Rama for a long time can do wonderful things for you.
Oh, absolutely. And I just wanted to share that I recently, well, James bought a little Shruti box, which, for those who don't know what it is, it sounds similar to the harmonium, but it doesn't have the keyboard. So it's basically just the air pumping through, making a drone sound, and you can change the key, you can change the notes, but not while you're playing it. So you'll just say, put it in one key. And then I've just been loving that, just playing the Shruti and just singing my own melodies that I make up. And sometimes it's the mantras, and sometimes it's just letting sound out, you know, just a vowel sound, like an ah or an oo. And that's a really, really cool thing to be able to do as well. And very accessible.
Yes. Yeah. Shruti boxes. Yeah. They're really way good. Way by. I have a American gentleman lives quite close to me now, and he plays drum with me in the kirtan, Roberto. But he also started on the Shruti box and progressed to the harmonium. So, I was quite surprised. The Shruti box I was looking online. And I was surprised that they're of course quite expensive. So again, like the harmonium, I think. It's interesting, actually. I've watched the price of the harmoniums over the years get quite, you know, go up in price. So I think, you know, the people are better off to, if I will say to people when they say, "Oh, I'd like to learn the harmonium," I say, "Have you got one?" They say, "No," and I say, "Come to me and have a free lesson and see if it's something you want to do," because I think nothing worse than going spending, you know, $700 to $900 on a good harmonium and then you never play it. Because hilarious. Unfortunately, harmoniums are like any wood instrument. If you don't play it, they do deteriorate. So it's good to know that you can commit yourself to it. But I've always made myself available. I said to people, you know, once you learn from me, you don't have to come because I live in the country. I said, we can always go online like you and I at this time. and we can do it online. I can take you, let you progress, just going through online. So there's ways of doing it. Yeah, you know, I enjoy teaching people. I don't charge a lot. The money people pay me, I always say make a donation, and that'll go to either the charities or the money. Also, I extend to money to my guru for her many charities. She has many charities and educational facilities throughout India that we support.
Amazing. How would people get in contact with you? Just maybe give me the websites.
Yeah, by all means, I'm always happy to people to contact me. You can find me as Sri Prana on Facebook or I also have a website, Nankiri Yoga, and you can find me on there. So I'm in my Ponga, and you'll be happy. Anybody wants to even just talk about what's going on, music they're interested in doing or what they can do. I've even had people say, oh, I'd like to use the guitar and do it, and that's possible too. So, yeah.
Yeah. And how about the details for Amma's website? Maybe people might like to look that up as well.
Yeah, if you'd like to look, go on to the Amma Australia, type in Amma Australia and AMMA Australia, and you'll get onto her website in Australia, and you can get links then to India. So you can find out, and there's a lot of information on there. If you're interested in seeing Mothers Are Good on YouTube, there's a thing called Amrit Ganga, and there's different episodes there. They're into series two now, but there's a whole series one, and it's just about half an hour, and you just get to see Amma in different areas of the world which she's done, and also she gives a short discourse, a teaching, and do some chanting, and you see them people coming up to have a hug, and it's very moving. I watch that. I find that really interesting. And of course, there is, if you go on the Amma Australia website, you'll see wherever people are watching, listening to your podcast, Michelle, you can see there is Amma satsang groups throughout Australia, and you can make contact there. The phone numbers are there. At the moment, of course, with the COVID, we're restricted, but the local members, we're using WhatsApp and keeping contact through that way.
Oh, that's excellent. It's good to be able to have this technology, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, well, I have so enjoyed chatting with you, and I just want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast, David.
Michelle, thank you. It's great to, we've known each other a long time, so it's a real honour to share this project with you. I think it's really great.
Thank you. You've always been so supportive of James and me, so thank you very much.
Okay. Namaste.
Namaste.
Greetings, everybody. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Shanti Sound podcast. You can access all of the show notes at shantisound.com.au/podcast. I would love you to subscribe, like, comment, or leave a review wherever you're listening. And connect with me on Instagram at shanti_sound and Facebook at Shanti Sound Australia. The music and sounds featured in the intro and outro are excerpts from the Shanti Sound Soundbath CD, recorded and produced by Michelle and James Byrne. You can download this and other music by Michelle and James Byrne at shantisound.com.au/music. Remember, sound brings healing and presence. The truest and sweetest sound comes from within. So hum, sing and create sound whenever you can. Thanks for listening. I look forward to sharing with you again soon.